You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.
SWIFT warns member banks of ongoing attempts at fraudulent funds transfer. U.S. investigation of Russian influence operations continues with bipartisan support. German fears of Russian election hacking persist. Apple iOS, McAfee Virus Scan Enterprise, and AirDroid get patches. Tor releases a browser with upgraded anonymity. And some guy steals $1 million so he can spend it on in-game purchases. I'm Dave Bittner in Baltimore with your CyberWire summary for Tuesday, December 13, 2016. SWIFT, the International Funds Transfer Organization, has warned its member banks that attacks on the networks have continued since the Bangladesh bank suffered a significant loss of funds almost a year ago. The threat is very persistent, adaptive, and sophisticated, said a letter from SWIFT obtained by Reuters, and it's here to stay. SWIFT is characterized as reluctant to say how many banks have been affected or how much money has been lost, but one of the system's security leaders acknowledged that there had been a meaningful number of cases. Some of the local banks were compromised through technical support systems, which represents a new wrinkle in the attack technique. As bipartisan investigation of Russian influence operations continue in the U.S., President-elect Trump's skepticism over attribution prompts fruitful discussion of the topic. The president-elect is skeptical about attribution generally, wondering how you'd know who was in your network unless you caught them in the act. There are, of course, many forensic techniques that can help reveal who was responsible for a cyber event. The U.S. intelligence community says it has high confidence in its attribution of influence operations to Russia. CrowdStrike goes farther, placing their confidence at 100%. The Democratic National Committee brought in CrowdStrike to investigate a suspected compromise of its networks back in May, and CrowdStrike is quite sure it caught both Fancy Bear and Cozy Bear, respectively the Russian intelligence services GRU and FSB, Red Pod, in the systems. It's worth noting two things. First, while attribution is indeed tricky and often uncertain, there's a general consensus that, in fact, Fancy Bear in particular doxed the DNC and leaked discreditable emails through, probably, Guccifer 2.0, DC Leaks, and WikiLeaks. Second, the Russian activity has generally been characterized as an information operation, that is, an attempt to influence voter perceptions and choices during the election, and not an attempt to directly manipulate the vote tallies. The evidence that the Russians favored candidate Trump over candidate Clinton largely comes down to the relative paucity of evidence that the Republican networks were similarly compromised. There were some early releases of Republican emails, mostly anodyne and routine communications among party members, organizers, and donors, but these slowed to essentially nothing after the parties had concluded their nominating process. Since there's no reason to suppose that Republican security was markedly superior to Democratic security, and since it's unlikely that any political organization could long withstand the attentions of a leading nation-state's intelligence services, the conclusion most drawn is that the Russian government favored Trump. In any case, there appears to be a solid bipartisan determination in Congress to get to the bottom of things, and the president has also directed that an investigation be done. Few think Russian interest in information operations ended with the U.S. elections. German authorities continue to express concerns that their elections have become the next target of Russian operations. Other observers see former Soviet republics and Warsaw Pact countries as likeliest to receive the ministrations of Russian intelligence services. Returning, with some relief, to more ordinary forms of cybercrime, we note that a new cryptocurrency, Zcash, has already drawn the attention of crooks. Kaspersky reports the criminals are installing mining software on victim machines to accumulate a stake in Zcash. Older cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin are, for various reasons, less susceptible to this form of manipulation. As we head toward the end of the year and into the next, there's an important sunset on the horizon. The SHA-1 digital certificate standard is being phased out and replaced with SHA-2. We checked in with Venafi's Kevin Bocek for the lowdown on the transition.
Hashing algorithms are only as good as they can create a unique output. And unique output that is not vulnerable to what's called collision. Collision is when we can create another hash. And generally, again, a hash algorithm is a fingerprint. You put in one number and you'll get out a completely unique number on the other end. And these collisions then, when you have the ability to create essentially a forgery, something that is unique, or a duplicate, I should say, of something that's supposed to be unique, is a big, big problem. So the great thing is that both the browser, the operating system, and the certificate authority world have realized this. And finally, we're going to be saying goodbye, or at least not trusting SHA-1 fingerprinted certificates anymore in the browsers and operating systems that we all use on our desktop, laptops, and mobile devices. So sunsetting will happen officially in February 2017 when our browsers, whether that be Microsoft Edge, Microsoft Internet Explorer, Apple Safari, Google Chrome, finally will display the insecure, not trusted, your connection is not private warning in all the browsers.
And so what's involved in making the switch? How hard is it to upgrade from SHA-1 to SHA-2?
Well, you've got to know what you're using. So you've got to know all the digital certificates that you are, in fact, using, which requires getting intelligence, you know, about what's deployed publicly, what might be inside your network, what might be deployed now out in cloud services or hosted by third parties. You then have to triage. You have to triage. All right, we're going to fix and replace these keys and certificates, get new SHA-2 certificates that have been issued for a few years by certificate authorities now. And as you're going through this whole process, validate that it's actually occurring to your policy and validate that you've actually successfully replaced your old SHA-1 certificates, or gosh, God forbid, you've got MD5 certificates, which we still see replaced now with secure SHA-2 certificates. That entire process doesn't happen by accident. That entire process, certainly, you know, to a lot of security teams, network teams working in businesses or governments is difficult. And that's why they're increasingly looking to automation, to systems to help them find out what they've got and walk them through that process and validate it.
That's Kevin Bocek from Venafi. Several patches and upgrades are out this week. An alpha version of a sandbox Tor browser was released over the weekend, promising more reliable anonymity. Apple has addressed 12 vulnerabilities in iOS 10.2. AirDroid has also received security updates that close off the possibility of recently discovered exploits. And, pushed by a vulnerability researcher, McAfee has shuttered 10 holes in its VirusScan Enterprise security product. And finally, in crime and punishment, the Bulgarian avalanche hacker, Krasimir Nikolov, has been extracted to the U.S., where he will stand trial thanks to the alert work of the alert G-men of the FBI's Pittsburgh squad. Avalanche was elusive, and so was our final criminal of the day. But it's difficult to see how this second gentleman escaped arrest as long as he did. Consider, if you will, the case of one Mr. Kevin Lee Coe, late of Sacramento, California. Mr. Coe is reported to have copped to a plea of embezzling some $4.8 million from his employer between 2008 and 2015. A thought experiment, if you will. If you were he, pause and imagine how you might spend your take. Snazzy cars? Check. Plastic surgery? Depends, but okay, check. Season tickets for the 49ers and the Sacramento Kings? Check and double check. But that's only $3.8 million or so. Here's where you may part imaginative company with Mr. Coe. He spent $1 million on in-game purchases, for Game of War. We hope the digital armor and virtual siege engines were worth it. Mr. Ko is expected to become a resident of Club Fed sometime in the spring.
Every day, your IAM tech debt grows. Your multi-generational services struggle to work together. Building an identity fabric can fix this. It makes all your identity tooling stronger and allows you to connect any app to any service you want to use, with zero coding, zero maintenance, and zero app downtime. Strata's identity orchestration platform separates the identity logic from your applications, so you can optimize existing IAM tools and manage them in a single control plane. Now, every vendor, standard, and architecture work together. In short, building your identity fabric means you can secure your non-standard apps, keep your complex access policies, retire outdated IDPs, and modernize in record time. So build your fabric with Strata Identity and get rid of tech debt for good. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity priorities, and receive a pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire.
Joining me once again is Ben Yellen. He's a senior law and policy analyst at the University of Maryland Center for Health and Homeland Security. Ben, welcome back. Interesting article in Ars Technica. An appeals court has ruled that it does not matter how a wanted man is found, even if it is via a stingray. There's some interesting stuff going on here. Fill us in.
Sure. So this case is called United States v. Patrick, and it took place in the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. And the majority held in that case, and it was a three-judge panel, that because there was an outstanding arrest warrant for the defendant in this case, the defendant had forfeited his reasonable expectation of privacy, and therefore a warrant was not required to use a stingray device to identify his location. Basically, the judge said, once you have an outstanding arrest warrant, you have forfeited that reasonable expectation of privacy, therefore it doesn't really matter what method law enforcement uses to find you. It can be a police informant. It can be a location identifying device like a stingray. This is somewhat of a workaround of the really serious issues that are invoked with stingrays about whether, in general, there needs to be some framework within law enforcement as to whether warrants are required and what that process should be.
Yeah, I thought it was notable that there was a lengthy dissent. The Circuit Chief Judge Diane Wood concluded, she said, it's time for the stingray to come out of the shadows so that its use can be subject to the same kind of scrutiny as other mechanisms. And she listed things like thermal imaging devices, GPS trackers, and so forth. You know, it strikes me that these stingray devices really seem to be a catalyst for a lot of these, a lot of interesting tests and conversations about our fundamental right to privacy.
Absolutely, and this dissent carries a lot of weight. Diane Wood is a very prominent circuit court judge. She was considered for a Supreme Court appointment by President Obama in both 2009 and 2010, and I think she brings up a very good point. Because of the secrecy surrounding this device and because of the haphazard way it's been implemented across different jurisdictions, both at the state and local level, the judicial branch knows very little about it. And I think that gets to the broader point that she brings up, that it's time for the judicial branch to come up with some sort of framework to evaluate this device. They've done so with all different types of devices. There have been cases on thermal imaging, on GPS trackers, on pen registers. The judicial branch is slow, but they do have an obligation to keep up with the technology, especially because this is such a novel issue.
All right, we'll keep an eye on it. Ben Yellen, thanks for joining us.
Are lengthy security reviews pulling attention away from your security program? With the largest network of trust centers, Vanta can help you streamline security reviews to win customer trust, save time, and close deals fast. Proactively demonstrate security by showcasing key resources like your SOC 2 or ISO 27001 and provide real-time evidence for passing controls. And when a security questionnaire is required, Vanta takes the first pass for you. Visit vanta.com/cyber to take a self-serve tour. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening.
Hey all, Rick here. At N2K CyberWire, we're dedicated to continuously improving the quality of the news and commentary on our network. That's why we're inviting you to participate in our 2024 audience survey. It only takes a few minutes, and your feedback is invaluable. Plus, you'll have the chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card as a thank you for your time. Head on over to cyberwire.com/survey. That's cyberwire.com/survey to share your feedback now.
And now a word from our sponsor, SpyCloud, the leader in operationalizing cybercrime analytics. Traditional threat intelligence is a thing of the past. Cyber criminals are stealing vast amounts of credentials, session cookies, and financial data every day, and it's hard to keep up. SpyCloud is the trusted partner businesses turn to fully understand their darknet exposure risk and neutralize threats before it's too late. SpyCloud alerts your organization as soon as an employee or customer's data appears on the dark net, so you can act faster than bad actors to prevent cyber attacks like ransomware, session hijacking, account takeover, and online fraud. With insights from the industry's largest repository of recaptured data, protect the digital identities and systems most important to your business. Get your free corporate darknet exposure report at spycloud.com/cyberwire and see what information criminals have in their hands today. That's spycloud.com/cyberwire.